Blog Talk Radio.
Except for the fucked up microphone, but hey, what are you going to do? Happens from time to time. Got a jam-packed show for you today. President Trump is giving smooth hand jobs to Goldman Sachs behind the dumpster. that was far too gross a mental picture there. But I said it, and we can't roll back the clock, so it is what it is. We also have a fascinating chart on what's going to happen to the uninsured rate under Trump care. The results of that are precisely what you think they are. Everything is going to go in the wrong direction, and it's going to go in the wrong direction fast. Joe Manchin, how's he doing with fundraising? We'll take a look at some of his numbers on that front. And then later on, Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General, wants to double down on police legally being able to rob you. You might think that sounds like hyperbole, but for those of you familiar with civil asset forfeiture, you know it indeed is not hyperbole. So, without further ado, let's get started, and we're going to do it with the Goldman Sachs story, which I think is the story of the day, but go ahead, go try to find it on mainstream media. And let me know how that goes. President Trump apparently can't stop his love affair with Goldman Sachs. So look at this. This is from The Intercept. After using Goldman Sachs as a punching bag for his campaign, sharply criticizing his political opponents for ties to the investment bank, Donald Trump has taken unprecedented steps to appoint former Goldman Sachs attorneys and executives to the upper echelons of government. It goes far beyond what's been reported. Not only is Jay Clayton, Trump's chair of Securities and Exchange Commission, after serving as the attorney who advised the bank during the bailouts of 2008, but new disclosures show that the team Clayton brought with him to oversee the financial market regulator are also former Goldman Sachs attorneys. While previous administrations have retained staff with ties to major banks, Trump has turned his administration into somewhat of a Goldman Sachs alumni organization. Trump's inner circle consists almost entirely of former Goldman Sachs executives, including his chief political advisor, Steve Bannon, his national security advisor, Dina Powell, and his top economic advisor, Gary Cohn. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin worked at Goldman Sachs for 17 years. Last month, Trump nominated Eric Euland, a former Goldman Sachs lobbyist, to serve as the Undersecretary of State, one of the most senior posts at the State Department. So this is example number 17,412 of how Donald Trump has absolutely, positively no shame. And in his mind, hypocrisy doesn't register. That's not a thing. So you can go back and you can look at the tape. I mean, we had Donald Trump go after Ted Cruz and go after Hillary Clinton relentlessly, mercilessly, over and over and over for their ties to Wall Street and specifically their ties to Goldman Sachs. And he derided them as establishment shills and doing the bidding of their donors and all that stuff. He sounded, in many ways, with his rhetoric on the campaign trail like a progressive. Second, he gets elected, goes in the other direction, says, no, now I'm going to become an administration that has more Goldman Sachs officials, more Wall Street bankers, more executives in it than any other administration in history. And again, I mean, any normal person would look at this and be a little surprised, but Trump has demonstrated repeatedly that what he says is wholly irrelevant. I mean, look at his rhetoric on jobs and outsourcing. He says, let's do a Made in America week. We need to, you know, buy America, America first. This is how we must do things. Meanwhile, if you look at him, his products are made in 12 different countries. 21 of the 31 items in his hotels are not made in America. So you have a guy who talks the talk in some respects, but he refuses to walk the walk. And if you were to call him out on that, it's a fake news, it's fake news, this is fake news media spreading fake news. But it's not. How are you going to – they're in your administration. Like, where's the question? Where's the open question? We can track exactly where your products come from and where they're made. So where's the question? He rips China repeatedly. There's so many, you know, pictures on Twitter, for example, of people showing the labels on, you know, a Trump ties or a Trump jacket or whatever the case is, and it says, made in China. He rips Mexico. Oh, we're going to build the wall. It's going to be tremendous, believe me. He has products that are made in Mexico. And he rips NAFTA. Guess what? The products that he has made in Mexico are made in NAFTA because, are made in Mexico because of NAFTA. So he's so immensely full of shit, it's amazing. But it's like he's a pathological liar because he somehow convinces himself that he's not lying when he repeatedly lies to your face. I don't care. You could be the biggest Trump supporter on the planet. When you hear this, the story of Goldman Sachs all over his administration, like, don't you get, you have to pick. You have to say, I agreed with candidate Trump or I agree with President Trump. You don't get to have it both ways. This is a problem that I run into all the time with Trump supporters. I got into it on Twitter yesterday with Tommy Lahren. Now, admittedly, that was on a different issue. But, you know, she's tweeting out this book a veteran gave her, which is like a – it just blows George W. Bush for his treatment of the veterans. Look, here's a picture of him painting a dog. Doesn't he care so much about the troops? And I said, hey, dipshit, you were big on the Trump train. Trump, on the campaign trail, said repeatedly that the war in Iraq was a disaster. We shouldn't have gone in there. It was horrendous. People died. They didn't have to die. We should have taken that money and rebuilt our infrastructure. Which is it? Which is it? Do you agree with candidate Trump or do you agree with George W. Bush? You cannot have it both ways. But they try to have it both ways. I don't know. They're both Republicans. So I agree with both of them at the same time, even though they take the opposite position on the same issue. You can't fucking do that. You have to pick, is candidate Trump right or is President Trump right when it comes to Goldman Sachs and when it comes to Wall Street? The answer is candidate Trump was right, which means you would have to criticize President Donald Trump, which many of them cannot bring themselves to do. And Democrats, oh my God, the fucking Democrats, the fucking Democrats. You know how easy it would be to win an election on this issue alone, on this issue alone? The president from Goldman Sachs, you could have a Democratic wave like we've never seen before if you just hammer home how this guy is only the representative of billionaires and corporations and Wall Street. But guess what? They can't use that line of attack, and they don't use that line of attack because the Democrats, many of them have connections to Goldman Sachs and Wall Street as well. So what do? I don't know. Let's find something where we can hammer away on Trump, but it has like very few policy implications. And Russia. Russia. We'll scream about Russia and how he's like an agent of Vladimir Putin in the Kremlin and he's like a puppet to them or something. And then we get to bash the other side without actually promising anything for our voters. How mighty, mighty convenient. So, you know, there you go, man. There's so many Democratic strategists are the most ineffectual motherfuckers on the planet because given the facts that this president has given us, the ammunition this president and the Republican Party has given us, I could win an election for these people on, like, one issue and have, like, 25 other issues just waiting in the reserve tank. Like, okay, we just destroyed them on that issue, now let's try it out the next one, and just go. You know, this is the fucking party from Goldman Sachs, the administration from Goldman Sachs, the liar said he was against Goldman Sachs, now they're everywhere, and they wrote his goddamn tax plan, and they're doing it to rig the economy for themselves against little people. Against regular people. Do you guys trust little people? Do you guys trust Wall Street bankers to make the best decision for you? Hammer them with that. Hammer them with net neutrality. Hammer them with the idea that they just gutted internet privacy rights. They signed a bill that only 6% of the American people agree with, Trump did, where it allows internet companies to give your information to third parties before they needed your approval to do that. He signed an executive order that allows coal companies to pollute the waterways. I mean, the list goes on and on. The guy continues to deregulate. He says for every new regulation, we need to get rid of two regulations. He's governing with, like, he's doing executive orders that are just right-wing radio talking points. Like, the guy is lost. He's currently escalating in Syria. So you know how much there is? He's doing so many things that the American people are like, we don't want you to do that. And the Democrats are like, we're not going to talk about any of that, Russia. Please. Please talk about how Goldman Sachs has taken over this administration, how they're a criminal organization, how they did fraud as a business model and got away with it, and how they own the government. Notice, Wall Street gets a bailout when they're in trouble. Do you? The regular people? No, you don't. You don't. If you fuck up, you get fired. They fuck up. They get bonuses paid for by the taxpayers, and they get propped up by the government. And then they get positions in the government where they get to rig economic policy in favor of them and their rich friends and against regular people. So President Wall Street sellout, that's Donald Trump. Okay. Okay. Let's move on. To Trump's inability to tell the truth. So President Trump did a Made in America product showcase yesterday, and he said some words about how great he is and how he's doing as president. And at one point, he said this about the number of jobs created under his administration. He said, quote, in Pennsylvania, 2 weeks ago, they opened a mine, the first mine that was opened in decades. Opened a mine, and, you know, all the people that were saying the mining jobs, well, we picked up 45,000 mining jobs in a very short period of time, and everybody was saying, well, you won't get any mining jobs. We picked up 45,000 mining jobs. Okay, so this is... this is Trump 101 now. This is what he does. He'll go out there, give a speech where he's shooting from the cuff. Shooting from the cuff? Is that a saying? I think it is. But if it's not, we made up a new one. And he'll just kind of ramble. But there is one thing that he has in his favor when he does this. Confidence. So he'll bumble around and he'll talk and he'll... look, let me just tell you, I have to tell you, believe me, folks, believe me, we're going to make America great again. He just goes, and he says so much shit, he hits you with like a monsoon of bullshit, but it's so much that it overwhelms people, fact checkers, journalists, whoever, and he gets away with saying most of it. And then, of course, even if you correct his ass, more people see the original speech than they see the fucking fact check that comes later on. But listen to that number. He said 45,000 mining jobs. We picked up 45,000 mining jobs in a very short period of time. So there were some journalists watching this, and they decided, that doesn't sound right. Let me fact check it. Well, it turns out, you go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Take a look at this. There were just 500 coal mining jobs that have been added since Trump took office, and there are only about 50,800 such jobs in total in the country. He nearly took credit for every single mining job in the United States of America. He said 45,000 were created under his administration. It was 500. When there's no accountability, there's no accountability. I mean, we just did the story before. He ripped Hillary Clinton and Ted Cruz and said, sellouts to Wall Street, to Goldman Sachs. They're their puppets. That's what they are. That's who they are. And then he's appointed, like, countless Goldman Sachs officials to his administration. And he doesn't even do it like a more savvy politician would do it, which is you get people who are linked to the bank but not directly from the bank so that there's, you know, plausible deniability. What do you mean? I had no idea there were connections to Goldman Sachs. They just know somebody who knows somebody who's at Goldman Sachs. No, Trump's like, all right, I'm going to hire the president of Goldman Sachs. And they write the tax plan. They present the tax plan. Steve Mnuchin, Gary Cohn, literally, they wrote the tax plan and they presented it. They were the ones who gave the speeches. All right, here's our tax plan. You're from Goldman Sachs. You're from a criminal organization that did fraud as a business model and rigged the economy in favor of yourself and against regular people. And lo and behold, his tax plan is nothing but a giant giveaway to the rich and the corporations and the Wall Street, and it shifts the tax burden onto the middle class. Did you know, under Trump's tax plan, get this, the bottom 50% or so of the country, more bottom 48%, 47% of the country, they get a tax cut of a whopping $40. They each get $40. The people in the top 0.1% or top, yeah, I think it's 0.1%. They get $940,000 each. So it's just tax cuts geared towards the mega rich. But this is what this guy, the forgotten man will never be forgotten again. This is what he does.
We're doing tremendous tax cuts, unbelievable tax cuts for the middle class. Believe me, let me just tell you.
Yeah, but then when you look at the details, that's not true at all. The tax cuts are going to the rich.
We're going to do an amazing health care bill. It's going to be the best health care bill, one of the best health care bills the world's ever seen, I have to tell you.
The fucking thing has a 16% approval rating. Why? Look at it. It cuts Medicaid $800 billion worth. It kicks more people off of health insurance, millions more. We're going to have a total of like 50 million people uninsured. So you're going to do health care reform and make it worse. You're going to kick more people off their insurance. The fuck is that? How do you do that?
It's going to be tremendous, let me just tell you.
So he has this remarkable ability to be so immensely disconnected from reality that the facts say one thing, and then he's just fucking just sheer bombast and arrogance and confidence going in the other direction. And then there's enough people in the country where they're like, oh, I don't know, I guess I trust Trump because fake news media is fake news. Look, I despise mainstream media. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that. But that doesn't mean Trump is good. And that doesn't mean he's telling the truth, because he most certainly is not. And doing your own inquiry and your own fact-checking will quickly reveal that. It's no wonder, though, to be fair, he has the lowest approval rating of any president at this point in his presidency in the past 70 years. So even though there's a small vocal minority that's loudly in favor of him, that number is dwindling more and more every day, and he's doing the worst of all the presidents in the past 70 years. And with facts like this, it's easy to see why. Okay. Do. Okay, now let's move on. Do one more here, then we'll take our first break. This will be some more facts on Trump Care. This is all pretty important. The Urban Institute put together an infographic on how much higher the uninsured rate would be under Trump Care, and the results are just stunning. So it says, how much higher would the uninsured rate be under the revised BCRA, that's Trump Care, than under the ACA, that's Obamacare, in 2022? Take a look at that. So we're talking nowhere in the country. Nowhere do we have a decrease in the uninsured rate. Nowhere. I'll just give you a few examples. We have Washington State, 144.1%. That's how much of an increase they're going to have in their uninsured rate. Oregon, 179.8%. California, 138.8%. Nevada, 76.5%. Indiana, Idaho, 50.8%. Sorry, Idaho, I just don't think of you often. Utah, 70.5%. Arizona, 45.2%. New Mexico, 175.6%. Let's go Texas, 21.6%. New York, 96.9%. And I'll let you guys just take a look at the rest there, but the uninsured rate is going to skyrocket under the Republican healthcare reform, which, you know, I keep trying to point out because it's amazing to me, means you're doing reform, but it's really anti-reform. It's reform going in the wrong direction. Because one would think any kind of conceivable healthcare reform that a rational person would do, one of the top priorities would be, well, obviously we have to cover more people. Like, if we're doing reform, the idea is to go in the right direction, not the wrong direction, and one of the key signs that you're going in the right direction would be covering more people. They do a healthcare reform bill, and they say, no, let's have more people uninsured. I mean, that's so stupid that it's incoherent. I mean, it's what? But you know what? There actually is an answer here. The answer is they're not crafting reform with the regular person in mind. Because if they were, then they can have the uninsured rate go up. That would be failure. Strike one, you're out. Horrible reform. They're doing it with the health insurance companies in mind. They're doing it trying to make them more money because that's their donors. Now, the health insurance companies are playing this smartly, intelligently, because they're writing letters like, oh, this is going to have terrible effects. We hope you don't do it. In reality, of course, they're for it because they're going to make more profit as a result of it. But it's a PR move on their part to say, yeah, no, totally, we don't want you to go in this direction, but they do want them to go in that direction because they're going to make more money if they go in that direction. But that's the beneficiary of this, the private for-profit health insurance companies, not the people. And the people get screwed. And we've covered time and time again how this bill is nothing but a giant tax cut to the rich. It cuts Medicaid $800 billion, increases the uninsured rate. 28,000 more people are going to die every year because they don't have access to basic health care under this bill. So every objective, measurable standard shows that this bill is worse, but they're still pushing in that direction. Now let me give you the final fact here. There will be 24 million fewer people who would have insurance in 2022 than would be the case if Obamacare stayed in effect. And the uninsured rate would increase 78% from 11.7% today to around 19.8% in the year 2022. So that's crazy. And understand, the parameters of this debate are mental. So most of your Democrats are just saying, defend Obamacare. Defend, defend, defend. That's the answer. Defend Obamacare. We made these gains. Got to keep them. But Obamacare itself was only a 25% step in the right direction when the real answer is Medicare for all. There's some Democrats pushing for Medicare for all, not nearly enough. So you have most Democrats say, let's defend Obamacare, which is already a piecemeal, shitty system that keeps the private health insurance companies in control, but it has some regulations that make things a little better for people, versus let's just go totally nuts here, do Trump Care, and go more in the direction of a so-called free market, which is going to have worse health outcomes for people. That's the parameters of the debate. No, the answer is Medicare for all, and we got to go hard in that direction. So there you have it. The uninsured rate. Other countries look at us, and they laugh. They laugh at this conversation. Uninsured rate? That's not a thing in other modern countries. Like, what do you mean? Yeah, here we have single-payer health care, so you get sick, you get help, and you don't pay anything. It comes out of your taxes. No co-pays, no deductibles, no premiums. You get sick, you get help, you go home. Doesn't that sound lovely? Whereas here, we're having a debate. All right, should we leave 23 million people out to dry to maybe go bankrupt over medical bills, or should we leave 50 million people out? Meanwhile, we have $7 trillion to waste in an unnecessary war overseas. It's almost like our government is totally broken and corrupt and rotten. Okay. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we have Joe Manchin. We have new evidence that the Democrats are in more trouble than people think. And Jeff Sessions looking to double down on legalized robbery by cop. So you don't want to miss any of this, guys. Stay right there.
The left. It's like I'm on an island by myself. The left. Please don't make me snap you with the left, the left. You will fake, so I'm gonna grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the last real nigga left, the left. It's like I'm on an island by myself, the left.
God, please protect me. All right, all right, all right, everybody, we're back. And let's get to it. We got the corporate Democrats making a charge. So Joe Manchin, being as wildly unpopular as he is of course having trouble raising funds for his reelection bid, right? I mean, the guy is, as far as the Democrats go, absolutely, positively despised. So what, he's going to muster up the support to beat a primary opponent and beat the Republicans in the general? Well, it turns out his unpopularity is irrelevant when you have big donors. So listen to this. He raised $1.4 million in the second quarter, according to Politico. $1.4 million. Now, in the previous quarter, he raised $552,000, which is still, by the way, a lot of goddamn money. And in total for his reelection so far, he's raised almost $3.5 million. This is from one of the most unpopular Democrats. He's just raking in the cash. Now, I need you to reflect on his record. I mean, here's a guy who only voted against three of Trump's 16 cabinet picks. He voted to approve Mike Pompeo to lead the CIA. Mike Pompeo said Edward Snowden should be executed. He voted to approve Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions for Attorney General. Mr. Good People Don't Smoke Marijuana, and he's now trying to go after even medical marijuana patients. Joe Manchin, a Democrat, voted for that guy. And we're going to get to a story in a little bit about how he's doubling down on civil asset forfeiture, which is legalized robbery by cop. This is a guy Joe Manchin supports. Joe Manchin supports Rex Tillerson for Secretary of State. So let me get this straight. Donald Trump repeatedly said on the campaign trail, we have to take the oil. We should have taken the oil from Iraq. Take the oil. So just advocating committing a war crime and stealing natural resources from a sovereign country. And then he picks the CEO of ExxonMobil to be Secretary of State. And so-called Democrat Joe Manchin says, I totally agree. He voted to get rid of the clean water rules to make sure that coal doesn't pollute the waterways. He's from West Virginia. They have polluted water like crazy. And he's not in favor of holding the coal barons accountable. He wants to poison the drinking water that, you know, women and children drink on a regular basis. This guy isn't even in favor of the EPA regulating greenhouse gases. He says the Environmental Protection Agency shouldn't really be involved in the business of environmental protection. He supported the Patriot Act. I mean, for Christ's sake, man. He is a disaster. He's as bad as it gets. I don't even know why he bothers to call himself a Democrat. Well, here's how he was able to raise that money, given that the strength of his ideas is irrelevant. He doesn't have strength in his ideas. He's nothing but a corporate sellout and Republican light. That's what he is. That's what he is. So how do you raise the money? Well, it's very simple. Only 1% of his money came from small donors. Only 1% from small donors. 99% from big donors. That's the problem with our system. Campaign finance and the way we do it continues to make the worst people the most well-funded, which gives them the best chance of election. Because they get to get their name out there more, they get to run more ads in favor of themselves, run more negative ads against their opponents. You're only taken seriously by the political class if you're able to raise a tremendous amount of money. Never mind the backing of the party establishment that circles the wagons to protect the Democrats, no matter how corporate they are, no matter how much they vote with the other side. So this is what I mean, guys, when I say that what we're doing with Justice Democrats here, we have the people on our side, we have the ideas are on our side, because we're doing what the people want. But we are at a perpetual institutional disadvantage, because Joe Manchin or any other corporate Democrat, they get to either themselves or they have their people or a PAC go out for them and get checks from big money donors, corporations, Wall Street, big pharma, private health insurance companies, lobbyists, and they get to, you know, raise in gigantic amounts from those people. So the amount of work that we need to do to raise even half of what these guys raise is well above and beyond, because we're taking our message directly to the people and raising in small dollar amounts. Because we say, as a matter of principle, we're not going to take corporate money, we're not going to take PAC money, we're not interested in that. Because that means that then the politician becomes beholden to the donors. So we don't want to have that incentive structure problem. We want to have it so that our candidates are always loyal to the people and to the ideas and the philosophy that they're promising to run on, the platform of Justice Democrats. But again, when you do that, I don't want people to get the idea that because our candidates' ideas are really popular and because we have the people on our side, when you look at the numbers, that automatically means a victory. Because it doesn't. What's so important, unfortunately, in our system is fundraising. Now, our candidates want to change that in the long run. They want to get money out of politics and have clean elections by law. But in the meantime, we don't have it. So how are we supposed to compete with them in a system that's broken and totally favorable to them because they raised the big money? Well, the answer is we just need that much more from you. And it's a gross thing, because we don't want the system to function like this at all. But we have no choice. We have no choice. So look, we're doing a fundraising drive for Justice Democrats because we really want to get all of our candidates elected. And so what we did here at Secular Talk was we had a shirt drive where half the proceeds went towards Justice Democrats. The shirt drive just concluded the other day. If you missed out, sorry, I know that sucks, but, you know, who knows? We usually try to do a shirt drive once a year or once every other year or something. I'm not the biggest fan of them, but I'm sure there will be one in the future at some point. So you missed out on that, but you can still give direct donations to Justice Democrats. We have a new link because we really, really want to fight and win, and that link is justicedemocrats.com/fight. justicedemocrats.com/fight. Go there, donate. Donate, donate, donate. This is basically the Secular Talk Justice Democrats fundraising link. So all the money, every penny of the money goes to the Justice Democrats and our candidates. But this is the link that, you know, I've been given and told by Justice Democrats. This is where we do our fundraising from Secular Talk. So let's show them the power of the Secular Talk audience. Let's show them that we're not fucking around. We are not fucking around. We're serious about beating corporate Joe Manchin. We're serious about beating corrupt Joe Crowley. We need to get Paula Swearingen elected. We need her to beat Joe Manchin. Because, again, if all things were equal, so the money, the amount they're able to get out their message, Paula Swearingen beats Joe Manchin every time, because the people agree with Paula Swearingen. But all things are not equal. We're at an institutional disadvantage. There's going to be a massive and permanent bias against us from corporate media, from establishment Democrats, from the entire Democratic Party. Obviously, the money disadvantage. So we have to do the best we can to try to overcome these disadvantages, and it's not going to be easy. But it requires time, effort, money, and yes, fight. So that's why our link is justicedemocrats.com/fight. Guys, look, it's as simple as this. If you want to defeat the corporate Democrats, donate. If you want to defeat them, donate. For those of you who don't know exactly what our candidates stand for, you can go read about all of them on justicedemocrats.com, and you can read our platform, JusticeDemocrats.com/platform. That's what our candidates stand for. That's what they're going to fight for. They're candidates who are unapologetic in pushing for Medicare for all, free college, a living wage, ending the wars, ending the drug war, doing a new deal for infrastructure spending, a green technology revolution, renewable energy revolution to fight climate change and to create jobs. Wouldn't it be amazing? How would it feel if we defeat the corporate Democrats and we show them that the power is really with the people? We can do it, but we're at a permanent institutional disadvantage, so we need your help. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. Go donate now. Okay. All right, let's move along to, oh man, what a story this is. You want to talk about a fail? We have some new evidence that the Democratic Party is in more trouble than many people think they are. Take a look at this. Oops.
Opposing Donald Trump, and barely a majority of the country believes that Democrats stand for nothing more than opposing Donald Trump, and barely a third believe they have their own plan. That's a problem for Democrats going forward. They have to stand for something beyond simply opposing the president.
That's only exactly what we've been warning about since before the election. We were saying, whoa. It sounds like the Democrats aren't selling a positive vision, aren't saying, hey, here are our policy ideas, we're going to fight for this. They're just kind of trying to base a movement around, we're not him. We're not him. I'm telling you, we're not him. And then now, after the election, they've only doubled down on that, tripled down on that. Now we're at the point where the crux of every argument they make is, we're not him, isn't he stupid and dumb, and oh yeah, by the way, Russia. Russia, something, treason, Russia, we're not him. Vote for us. How convenient is that argument when it allows you to bludgeon your opponent over the head repeatedly without actually promising anything to the voters? Funny how that works out, that's the path the corporate Democrats choose to take. Is, well, I mean, guys, we got to beat Trump. So let's talk about how bad he is. Let's talk about how he's a sellout to Vladimir Putin or something. He's a Kremlin puppet. But let's, in the process, not make any promises. Because we know that when we get in power, we're not really going to do anything. We're going to do fucking Medicare for all. We're going to do free college. We're going to do a living wage. No. So we know what? That's hard work. We don't want to promise that. So we'll just say, he's bad. Vote for us. We're not as bad. Well, now the country's on to you. 52% of the American people say, yeah, the Democratic Party, they don't stand for anything other than we're not Trump. A majority of the country goes, they don't stand for shit. They stand for nothing. They don't stand for anything. And only 37% say they stand for something. How sad is that? More than half the country says you don't stand for anything. They're on to you. They're on to your games. You can't pull the wool over people's eyes anymore. They're sick of it. They're done. All this fucking partisan bickering and how it's always so personal. It's about, like, personalities and, you know, it's never about, hey, I have a philosophical, ideological position in favor of X and I will argue for it. That conversation is fucking 80 miles back on the side of the road and they're like, oh, yeah? Well, Ivanka is, you know, too much control and shouldn't be, and Jared Kushner's bad, and, yeah, Trump is poopy-faced. Yeah, we don't like him. Vladimir Putin runs the White House. Vote for us. Who the fuck wants to vote for that? Who wants to vote for that? Now compare that message with the message of the most popular politician in the country, literally. Medicare for all, free college, living wage, new deal to rebuild our infrastructure, and the wars. That's Bernie Sanders. And he's the most popular politician by far. Have any of you stopped to think, like the corporate Democrats, oh, wait, maybe we need to focus on policy. But here's the thing. They can't, because they're also beholden to their donors. So their donors don't want Medicare for all. Their donors don't want free college. Their donors don't want a living wage. So for them, it's most convenient to only talk about how bad Trump is and something Russia. But it also allows them to still serve their donors. And that's why the Democrats, as terrible as the Republicans are doing, I mean, Trump is historically disliked as a president. Historic. His approval rating at this point in his presidency is lower than any president in the last 70 fucking years. The Republican Party is viewed as a joke. They're pushing a health care bill that has a 16% approval rating. They just got through a bill that guts internet privacy that only 6% of the country supports. They're a fucking wrecking ball. They're about to get rid of net neutrality. They're doing so many unpopular things. It should be the easiest thing in the world to beat them. But the Democrats are struggling, and they're struggling because they don't stand for anything. They don't stand for anything. Enough to just say, we're not them, they suck. Because people go, okay, what are you for? They go, wait, new phone, who this? What does that mean? They don't know, because they don't know. They think it's enough. They do half the argument. Hey, they're bad. And people are like, and then? And then it's like, no, and then. No, but, okay, so why do you want me to vote for you? You said they're bad. Got it. Now why are you good? I didn't say I was good. I just said they're bad in Russia, something. 52% of the country says they stand for nothing. 52% of the country. 52% of the country says the Democrats stand for nothing. When the policy positions that the Democrats are supposed to push for are all popular. 60% want Medicare for all. Over 50% want free college. 58% want to raise taxes on the rich. 60% are in favor of gay marriage. 60% are in favor of legalizing marijuana. 80% want to raise the minimum wage. Only 17% still want to be in Afghanistan. All the positions that the Democrats are supposed to take are so immensely popular. But a majority of the country says they don't stand for anything. Why? Because the country's right. They don't stand for anything because they don't argue for the things that they're supposed to argue for. There's Bernie Sanders doing that. There's Ro Khanna doing that. There's maybe a handful of others doing that. But that's it. But that's why Justice Democrats is here. We're here to save the day. You go read our platform, justicedemocrats.com/platform. What the American people want is what we push for. We're populist left. But in reality, we're just the center of the country because we're pushing for what the American people want. And we don't take any corporate money or big money. We don't do it. We don't want it because that sets up an incentive problem where the politicians are going to serve the donors. We don't want them. We don't want them to do that. So we don't want the donors, the big money donors. We want small money donors who are regular people because that's who we're going to represent, which is where you come in and why we need you. So we just did our fundraising drive with the shirts, the Secular Talk shirts. Unfortunately, that just concluded. But we're still doing direct donations that go to Justice Democratic candidates. Come on, guys. Let's get rid of corporate Joe Manchin. Let's get rid of corrupt Joe Crowley. Let's clean house with these corporate Democrats. I'm sick of having these conversations about how bad the Democrats are. You think I want to come out here and bash the Democrats when the Republicans are ruining the country? I don't want to do it, but that's the only way to reform the Democratic Party so that we can beat the monstrous Republicans. So come on, come on, come on. The link is justicedemocrats.com/fight. JusticeDemocrats.com/fight. We need your donation because we need to take out these corporate Democrats. So let's do it. Let's have a Democratic Party that stands for something again, and let's change these poll numbers. Let's make it so the Democrats win in a giant wave instead of more than half the country saying they don't stand for anything. Let's make it so that when you ask any American, whether they agree or disagree, hey, what do the Democrats stand for? They go, oh, Medicare for all, free college, living wage, end the wars, new deal, legalize marijuana. Let's make it so that that's the answer, and it's a snap answer. Yes, be repetitive. Say it over and over. Get it into people's heads because people will say, I agree with that, and then they'll start to vote for you. Okay, let me do one more, then we'll take our final break. Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. Here we go with Jeff Sessions. This one got me mad. Very, very mad. And you're about to see that. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is looking to double down on legalized police robbery. So this is from the AP. They say the Justice Department will soon make it easier for local law enforcement to seize cash and property from crime suspects and reap the proceeds, Attorney General Jeff Sessions said Monday. Sessions said a shift will be announced this week that will increase the use of asset forfeiture, especially for drug suspects. The practice has been criticized because it allows law enforcement to take possessions such as cars and money without indictments or evidence a crime has been committed. Wow. So I call this legalized police robbery because it is legalized police robbery. They see you, they don't like the way you look, for whatever reason, they can say, yeah, I think that you're about to commit a crime and your possessions are going to be used in that crime, so we're going to seize it. And the burden of proof is shifted. It's not on the state to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. The burden of proof is now suddenly on you after I took your shit to explain why you think you should have it back. And there's, you know, a process that doesn't even function in that respect, and people are just kind of screwed and they just get their stuff jacked from them. Meanwhile, he's doubling down on this when law enforcement took more stuff from people than burglars did last year. This is one of those facts that people don't believe until, you know, you show them and you point it out repeatedly, because it doesn't sound true, because, I mean, that's crazy to think that basically police stole more shit from people than people who steal shit from people. That sounds crazy. But guess what? It's just not covered. It's rarely discussed because if it's law enforcement doing it, it's kind of viewed as, well, it's inherently respectable because they have a uniform and they have a badge and they represent the community. And what if they don't? What if they're just a bunch of thugs in uniforms with badges? Now, I'm not saying all cops are bad. They're not. But what I am saying is the facts show that they're stealing more shit than people who steal are stealing shit. In fact, let me give you specifics. The Treasury and Justice Departments deposited more than $5 billion into their asset forfeiture funds. $5 billion. Now, according to the FBI, that same year, burglary losses were only $3.5 billion. So burglars steal $3.5 billion from people. The police stole $5 billion in asset forfeiture. It shouldn't be legal. It's that simple. And then also, a lot of departments take this money and they put it towards shit for themselves. So now there's an incentive to go rob from people. We covered a story a while back about how they set up like a new break room and they got a fucking new coffee machine or margarita machine or whatever the fuck it was. And they did that with money that they jacked through civil asset forfeiture. So it's just basically trusting the state when they say, trust us, we got this, man. It's all good, don't worry. Look in the other direction. If we do some shit, it's legit. Just by definition, I have a uniform, I have a badge. So when I start robbing people, look the other way, it's okay. I don't know, they look suspicious enough to me, so I don't feel bad about doing it. So yeah, I took the money. I took the money from them, I took the property from them. They can't get it back, and yeah, we're using it to personally profit off of it. We're using it to, you know, redo our police department. And Jeff Sessions looks at this and he goes, nothing wrong here. In fact, I love that. Let's do more of it. It's supposed to be the case that nobody is above the law. But according to the far-right ideology, it's the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite. If you're in a position of authority, if you have the badge and the gun and the uniform, that's exactly what it is. You are above the law. You are the law, so you get to do whatever you want. Other people can't do what you do, but you get to do whatever you want, and we're going to defend it because we're authoritarians at our core. So, yeah, if you steal from people, well, you know, maybe they had it coming. Maybe they deserved it. Maybe we don't need due process. Maybe we don't need habeas corpus. Maybe constitutional protections are – forget that. I can't believe this is still around, civil asset forfeiture. They need to do, you know, cases over this and sue, and the Supreme Court has to slap it down. I mean, this is crazy. And there's even signs – I think it was Clarence Thomas, incredibly far right-wing judge, who was like, yeah, I don't know about the constitutionality of that. So you could even maybe win over some conservative justices on this. So the liberals are already there, and some conservatives, if you win, you could win them over, because you know what argument you make to them. This isn't small government. You guys say you believe in small government. That's small government when the government could just take your shit, not have to present any evidence, just say, I don't know, you look guilty, so I took it. I mean, that's fucking crazy. So there we have it. Jeff Sessions proving yet again he doesn't believe in small government. He's an authoritarian, and he believes, you know, might makes right. The force of the state means they are correct, and you have to bow your head to them. At least when he's in charge, he believes that. If he disagrees with the people who are in charge, oh, my God, then all of a sudden he would, you know, go nuts and say, this is crazy. You can't just take people's stuff. You're big, bad liberals. When it's him in charge, when it's his buddies at the police department, oh, yeah, you take whatever you want. Beyond pathetic. Okay. Take our final break. When we come back, we got another crazy story coming out of Saudi Arabia. And then when I tell you the people who are considering running for office, you're going to shit yourself. That's what's going to happen. Stay right there. Thank you.
All right, everybody, we're back. We are back. All right, let's dive into. I got one more healthcare story, and then after that, we'll talk about what's happening in Saudi Arabia, and then some new celebrities are considering throwing their hat in the ring to run for office, and it's kind of funny. Okay. People for Bernie and ActionNetwork.org put together a protest in D.C. Over Trump Care, and they got this hilarious moment on video when the authorities tried to silence them.
Hey, you're protesting out here?
Isn't that wild? Like, we have the First Amendment of the Constitution, you know, free speech, free press, free protest, and then they're exercising their free speech rights and they're protesting a horrific, horrific healthcare bill, and the cops are like, you can't do that. Really? Why can't we do it? What law are we breaking? It's a congressional... It's a law that says you can't disrupt order in Congress. Just be like, dude, I don't know. I was told by some old douchebags that I had to, you know, kick out protesters. But if he were to be honest and he were to say that, then he might actually have a moment, an epiphany, and go, oh, wait. Yeah, wait a second. Shouldn't you be allowed to do this? Isn't, like, you're just having your voice heard in a democracy and being disruptive of these old scumbags who are trying to absolutely destroy the healthcare system. Our healthcare system is bad enough as it is. But under this bill, $800 billion cut from Medicaid, about 50 million people uninsured by 2022, giant tax cut for the rich. Now protections for pre-existing conditions are optional on a state-by-state basis. Like, who the fuck are we kidding, son? Who are we kidding here? Yes, you should be protesting. That's the most patriotic thing you can do. And then you know what thought, like, was really driving me crazy as I was watching this video is that, so they're silencing people from saying, this is a bad bill. Let's not do it. I'm being mildly disruptive to try to save lives. And, like, there aren't going to be any cops there to, you know, say, hey, it's illegal when your health insurance rejects your claim and you're going to go bankrupt over some relatively standard surgery. Nobody's going to be there for that. Nobody's going to be there to say, hey, those 45,000 people that died, or I think it would be 58,000 under this bill, the 58,000 people that died because they didn't have access to basic health care because of how shitty our health care system is, that's illegal. You know, nobody should not have access to basic health care in what's supposed to be an industrialized nation. No cops are going to be there to say, oh, that's illegal that these people died because they didn't have health care. That's illegal. These people died because they were kicked off their Medicaid. That's illegal. You're going to make this poor family go bankrupt because they have medical bills for their kids. There's going to be no cops there to say, you can't do that. That's illegal. No, that's just standard operating procedure. Yeah, what do you mean? Some people kick them off of Medicaid. Some people go bankrupt because they don't have insurance. Some people go bankrupt even with insurance because they're, you know, their deductible or their copay is too high. So look at how fucked up the priorities are. Law enforcement tells protesters trying to save the healthcare system, you're being disruptive. Stop. You can't do that. But when people actually die because of lack of healthcare, nobody's there to say, oh, you can't do that. And let's just make it so that if you are somebody who's responsible for upholding the law, that you understand the supreme law of the land, the Constitution. Because, you know, like, I get it. You do need things to function in Congress. But that doesn't mean that you can't have people be mildly disruptive to make a political point. That's a very important political point. That's basically trying to save lives. To try to say that's not protected under the First Amendment is just the most backwards reading of the First Amendment of the Constitution I've ever seen. But to be fair to this officer, I mean, it just looks like he doesn't know. It looks like if you ask him, you know, tell me what's in the First Amendment, he'd go, he just seems like he's totally out of it. And unfortunately, so many people that have positions of authority and power are. And that's kind of on purpose. Like, yeah, I don't know. These people will just do whatever, you know, the rich, corrupt assholes tell them to do. And that's the kind of stuff you get. Answers where they don't have an answer. Hey, why exactly can't I protest here? You could disrupting the thing and stuff. Yeah, what law is that exactly again? New phone, who dis? Okay. Now, we move on to what's happening in Saudi Arabia. BuzzFeed News is reporting on a story straight out of the year 1200 coming from Saudi Arabia. Take a look at this. Over the weekend, a Saudi woman uploaded a video of herself on Snapchat, which showed her walking around a historic fort in a village north of the capital, Riyadh, while wearing a crop top and a miniskirt. Less than 24 hours after she posted the video, Saudi Arabia's Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice, the Kingdom's Morality Police, so Orwellian that name, said that it was working with authorities to investigate her. An arrest warrant by the Riyadh police, posted by some Twitter users online, says the woman was disrespecting and violating the teachings of Islam. Yeah. File that under, don't give a fuck, she should be allowed to do it. This is one of our top allies in the year 2017. It's a national scandal in Saudi Arabia right now that a woman walked around in a skirt and a crop top. It's a national scandal. And you should have seen some of the Twitter comments on this, man. Oh, oh boy. I've never seen anything like it with people, you know, saying, yeah, see, this is what people mean when they say they want... People in Saudi Arabia saying this. Like, yeah, this is what people mean when they say they want to have more freedom. Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. Yes, women should be allowed to walk around whatever the fuck they want to wear. How is this hard? And they act like, you're offending me and my beliefs by wearing that. Wait a second. They didn't hurt you. They didn't touch you. They didn't physically do anything to you. They didn't make you do anything. She's just wearing what she wants to wear. But you've offended my religious sensibilities. Well, that's nice. That's your religious sensibilities. You don't like it? Go the fuck away. Go elsewhere. Go watch something else. Go watch a woman in a niqab or a burqa and feel better. But they have this thing where it's like they feel like it's their right to impose on other people.
Like, I have a very fundamentalist, right-wing, literal interpretation of Islam, and I believe Sharia should be implemented, and everybody must follow it.
Okay, but what about if that woman, riddle me this for just a second. I have no clue what her beliefs are, and I don't really care. But let's say she's also Muslim, and she says, yeah, I'm Muslim, and I don't agree with you. I want to dress like this and be Muslim. In these people's minds, I don't know, we're going to lock you up for that. Well, who the fuck you gave a monopoly on what's correct and what's right and what's the only interpretation of Islam that's acceptable? No, I mean, this is one of the many problems with theocracy is that there's an underlying assumption that, well, obviously, whatever interpretation of the religion is implemented is the correct one. But if there's multiple different interpretations, then theocracy, by its very nature, is never a good idea. Because then you just have one person say, well, that's not how I view it. I think that the way we're supposed to view this part of the book is this. Well, I think the way we're supposed to view it is that. So why don't we all compromise and say, well, then we should just have a secular government, and you can interpret your own religion however you want, however fucking backwards you want it to be, or however modern you want it to be. How about we agree on secularism? In other words, keep the government out of religion, let people live their own lives and make their own decisions, and the only things that should really be illegal against the law are not for religious reasons. The only things that should be illegal are, okay, did you hurt somebody? Did you steal their property? Did you, you know, physically do something to another person against their will? Like, those are things that should be illegal because you're actually physically hurting other people. The fact that these, like, fundamentalists are the most triggered fucking snowflakes on the planet. They lost their shit over a woman wearing a skirt and a crop top, and it's a national scandal. How fucking triggered? Like, oh my God, I made a blank! They're also super repressed and horny at the sight of any human flesh, clearly. But that triggers you? I see a leg. I'm so outraged. That the fucking specialist little snowflakes in history were triggered by the microaggression and they need their safe space. Give me a safe space where I can't see anything on a woman. It's the only way I feel safe. So, yeah. Let people live their lives, man. Freedom. And this is our top ally who we're arming. Let that settle in. We're giving these guys billions of dollars worth of weapons to enforce this kind of an ideology at home. An arrest warrant over a Saudi woman in a crop top and a skirt. This is what they're spending their resources on. This is what they're doing with those guns. You gave that state a monopoly on the violence. This is the same ideology as ISIS. That's exactly what it is. I mean, you could say, well, no, I'm offended by that. But it's true. That's the same ideology as ISIS. How dare you show any skin, you loose slut. Unbelievable. 2017, we're arming this backwards ass regime that arrests women for showing a little bit of skin. And look, you talk to anybody, any reasonable person, and they'll go, that's not even like crazy revealing. What are you talking about? That's just like a regular skirt and a crop top. What the fuck are you talking about? Time to get more modern, man. It's not equal. Don't give me that cultural relativism bullshit of like, well, that's the way they want to live. Well, obviously not. There are a lot of people that are like, no, I want to wear that, and they're trying to force me by law not to wear that. That's not how, well, that's just different. It's not worse. No, that's worse. It's worse. It is less free. So, and when the U.S. government tries to pretend, well, freedom and democracy, that's what we're in favor of, liberal values. Well, then why the fuck are you arming and backing the least free government on the planet that wants to arrest women for dressing normal? Nonsense. I have two headlines for you here that just depress me endlessly. First of all, Kid Rock might run for Senate. Now, 2 years ago, a year ago, I think all of us would have just laughed at this. We would say, oh, ha, ha, that's funny. It'd be funny if he ran too and just got destroyed. But now it's the age of Trump. So he might actually run, and he might actually win. Because that's where we're at. I mean, that's what it is. Trump won. Arnold Schwarzenegger was a governor. Jesse Ventura, who perhaps it's unfair to put Ventura in category with the other ones, and even Schwarzenegger to a certain extent, but Schwarzenegger was a governor, Ventura was a governor, Trump is president. Is Kid Rock as a senator really that fucking out there? I mean, it's totally within the realm of possibility, if you ask me. So that's one of the headlines that depressed me. Here's the other one. Caitlyn Jenner might run for office. I don't even know what commentary to make on this other than to say I'm just depressed. That just depresses me. It's like profoundly unserious people are trying to do the most serious thing there is. Like run shit, run a country, govern, make laws. Like that's just stuff directly affects people's lives. And we're taking these like really silly people and saying, well, maybe. I don't know. I've seen them on TV before, so they must be more legitimate than other people, right? No, the potency and the content of their ideas is what matters. And does anybody really think like, oh yeah, Kid Rock and Caitlyn Jenner have really thoroughly thought through all the important issues? Go ask them what their take is on marginal taxes. See what they have to say. Oh man. And by the way, it's not just like, well, come on, it's always on the Republican side. They're the ones who went, It often is on the Republican side, but what are the Democrats trying to do now? Many Democrats are trying to draft The Rock for 2020. They floated Oprah to run. Michael Moore, who is a guy who generally focused on policy. He was like, wouldn't it be great if we ran The Rock or Tom Hanks or Oprah? There's a fucking pack that was just created to try to draft The Rock to run. So everybody's seemingly guilty of this. And, you know, I mean, I guess celebrity-obsessed culture really is something that's like, well, okay, you've gone a little too far. Pump your brakes. I'm not one of those people who normally would just say, like, because I like TV and I like being a lazy motherfucker and, you know, surfing the internet, watching TV. Like, my idea of a great night is just kind of chilling with the TV on. So I can't, like, shit on celebrity culture because I watch that shit all the time. So, but, yeah, isn't this a step too far when they're just viewed as, like, in a different class of human beings, so let's just give them the keys to everything and let them run shit? No, we should vote for people and elect people who stand for ideas that would improve everybody's life. We shouldn't just vote for people because, I don't know, I've seen them a lot of other places, so I'm familiar with them, so I guess they must be better. How's that working out with Trump, and how'd that work out with all the other celebrities that we elected? Okay. And the final story of the day for everybody. So here's an interesting new fact from Forbes that I wanted to share with you. And it sounds like it's, you know, like, whatever, who cares why you're bringing this up. But I think there actually is an interesting, political conclusion to draw from this. So they say, report, hip-hop and R&B is the dominant genre in the U.S. for the first time in music. According to the report, R&B and hip-hop are now responsible for 25.1% of all music consumption in the U.S., while rock claims 23%. Looking at the rest of the numbers listed that dissect how people are consuming these styles of music, it's clear that streaming is to thank for the swap in ranking. Rock is far and away the winner when it comes to album sales. The genre claims 40% of all album sales in the country, but the total number of records actually purchased dwindles every year. So while that percentage may remain steady or even climb, it's not representative of how Americans are truly consuming music. Hip-hop and R&B, on the other hand, is responsible for just over 29% of all on-demand streams across the country, and that is the only field that is growing noticeably. In fact, R&B and hip-hop is almost as popular on streaming services like Spotify and Apple Music than the next two genres, rock and pop, combined. At least 7 of the top 10 most popular songs on streaming platforms in 2017 fit squarely into the hip-hop field. Damn. While another Bruno Mars, That's What I Like, blends pop and R&B.
Okay.
So it seems like a weird random side fact, but I think this is important because I'm willing to pound the gavel, man. I think the culture wars are over. I do. So gay marriage was the first sign that the culture wars are over. And not even necessarily the fact that it actually became law. The polling, to me, because even before it became law, 58% of the American people said, yeah, legalize gay marriage. Now it's up to 61% that say, yeah, gay marriage, of course. Marijuana is another one. 60% of the country wants to legalize marijuana. So these are ideas. Look, I don't know. You guys might understand, might not understand, but like, you go back to polls from just 2006, not that long ago. And we're talking, well, I mean, it is long ago now. It's over 10 years ago. But you're talking 35% of people legalized gay marriage, about 35% of people, yeah, legalized marijuana. So we're talking gigantic swings, almost doubled in a 10-year period. That's unheard of. That is a giant cultural shift. And what's happening is younger people are getting older and they're getting more involved, and they, you know, millennial generation now has fairly developed political opinions. And those opinions include gay marriage is a no-brainer, legalizing marijuana is a no-brainer, and they have music preferences that are rather clear. So R&B and hip-hop is now the most dominant genre in America. And this is something that you might say whatever, but there's a lot of people in the middle of the country who view this as like the end of America, because it's somehow less American to prefer R&B and hip-hop to country music or rock music or whatever it is. But no, I think it's mostly a good thing, because the younger generation, the differing taste is just irrelevant. Like, I don't care if you prefer rock or R&B or whatever the fuck it is. But I think that goes hand in hand with certain social ideas about social policy, which show that the left has won gay marriage, marijuana, and things like that. So I think that's a good sign. And I think the future is a lot more left-wing and a lot more in Bernie Sanders' image. Okay, guys. I love you, baby. Kyle and Corin tomorrow all day. I'll be looking forward to that. And everybody enjoy the rest of your day. And we will be back here on the live show on Thursday. All right, guys. Love you. Peace.